Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to Beautiful Monday Afternoon. The time is 1 minute past three. My name is Rosie Muthena, aka the Afro-Yiddish Princess. And welcome to my show called Pan-African Connect, where we connect to beautiful people all around the continent, east, west, central, everything that has to do with Africa, whether it's about tradition, cultures, music, careers, or just our pure love for this continent. Today, we're going to be looking at Portuguese-speaking Africa, focusing on two main regions, Angola. The rise of Angola in the last 5 to 10 years is phenomenal, not only on the entertainment front, on the economic front, what they're doing, the international projects that are coming in. And then we're also going to be going to Mozambique and looking at the music scene. And I'm going to have two hot, gorgeous people in the studio with me. I've got Weza Solange. And of course, if you want to go to my Facebook page, you can see her gorgeous picture. And then also DJ Voodoo SA, who's from Mozambique, going to be speaking from that point of view. But before we get into that, we got to start with this.
Yeah, you know what it is.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
Yeah, you know what it is.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
Yeah.
Pouring down. Soon as I hit the shoe, I go so hard. I'm Rosh Hashanah. I blow the shofar. Get my hair did. Reading the Torah. I'm thugged out. I set my enemies with the menorah. And I got the pedal to the metal. Cruising in my minivan. Coming straight up out the shadow. Hear my grandma talk, but there's nothing you can tell her. We on the way to meet up with our Jewish diamond seller. She trying to set me up, but I'm breaking hearts. At least it's circumcised. Good start.
Yeah, you know what it is. My nose and ass, they're both big. I use hot sauce on my lox and bagels. We on the corner, shooting dreidels.
Repping for my parents. When you see me, you know everything. Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
We shut it down, had my bar mitzvah at KFC.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
Got a call from my rabbi, this just in. There's a great deal on kosher chicken. Wearing big glasses, but I'm chic though. My bar mitzvah was cracking all week, ho. I'm sipping Clico, and I'm keeping Shabbos. Every Hanukkah, I devour the roots and lockers. No paper planes, but I'm taking flight. I got a free trip to Israel, birthright.
Yeah, you know what it is. My nose and
three. Welcome to my show, Pan-African Connect. My name is Rosie Muthena, aka the Afro-Yiddish Princess. If you want to give us a shout, the number is 0861-555-189. Of course, I'm on Twitter, PrincessRTM, and I'm on Facebook and Instagram. So today on Pan African Connect, we're going to be looking and talking to two phenomenal people from the continent who represent Portuguese-speaking Africa. From Angola, we have Weza Solange. How are you, baby?
Great. Thank you for having me on the show.
It's only a pleasure. And then my longtime buddy, and I'm going to tell you why it's a long time, because we literally started from the bottom to here. my good friend Michael, how are you doing, darling?
I'm great, sir.
DJ Voodoo SA.
That's right.
Excellent. So let's start with you, Weza. Uh-huh. Angola. You were brought up, when did you actually come to South Africa?
Like, I've been in South Africa since my high school days. I know a lot of people thought I only came through after Big Brother, but no, I finished my high school here in South Africa. Yeah. Then I did my university here, 2 degrees. Only then did I go onto television.
Oh, wow.
So I've been here for a minute.
Yeah, so you're literally South African.
Exactly.
You're South African with a sexy accent. And what did you study?
I studied marketing and business management. Always loved marketing.
Yeah.
And it incorporated really well when I decided to go into television.
Yeah.
Which happened by mistake, but it has been working out pretty good. So
those ones always help.
Exactly.
What was the mistake?
I mean, I remember when I started working on TV, I just wanted an extra gig in order to be able to pay for my university fees. I wanted to help out my mom.
Yeah.
And I liked it. I liked it. And I started getting more offers. I felt that I was good at it. Mm-hmm. I started practicing and becoming better and putting more work into my craft. And next thing I know, yes, I was still using marketing, but that was to market the career that I decided to take, which was on television.
Yeah.
So,
but, you know, what I like
mistake.
What you said is that a lot of people, when they come into this industry, they just think, well, you need to have a good body and smile.
Absolutely
and
not.
And the fact that you're putting your effort into the craft. And
definitely.
I mean, what advice could you give to somebody who thinks along those lines?
No, definitely. You have to, I actually wanted to study because I know the television in my mind in the beginning, I thought that television is not going to last for too long.
Yeah.
I also thought that yes, once you're young and beautiful, it does make it easier.
Mm.
But as you grow older, you need something to fall back on.
Yeah.
I never thought that my fall back on would still continue to be in television in thoughts of production and so forth, which my business management degree is coming in very handy.
Yeah.
But the education is what has maintained me on a stable and constant path.
Yeah.
So definitely you need that business mind, you need that education, because there's so many crooks out there. I know that the only reason I didn't get hustled a lot of the times is because I went back to the principles of, wait a second, something just feels wrong here.
Yeah.
And that is stuff that I was learning during college, during my marketing and my business classes.
But I mean, being in a foreign country at a very young age, what were the challenges?
Oh my gosh. Number one, it was the language.
Mm.
And language is an incredible barrier, because even when people speak the same language, they misunderstand each other so much.
Yeah.
Now imagine when nobody can understand what it is that you're trying to say.
Michael's laughing.
And the culture was extremely different. I mean, I had never been exposed to so many cultures within one country. And then being on television, when I entered, I realized that it was a clique, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very small circle that was not very happy in allowing new people in.
Especially this gorgeous bombshell from Angola.
The one
in.
With the voice.
With the accent. It was like, where's the girl?
and I understand. And that happens in every single country. I feel like television is a kind of industry. It's a tight-knit community, and they're not into letting new people in.
Yeah.
So not only was I new, but I was from a different country. I could not speak the same language. All that became a problem.
Mm.
But I love taking challenges like that and just seeing how far I can go. And amongst all the challenges, I can still say that South Africa has been extremely welcoming to me.
Yeah.
I know a lot of other countries. I know that it wouldn't be as easy in Angola, for example. You going to Angola and not speaking Portuguese or speaking Portuguese with an accent and being able to work in some of the places where I worked, it wouldn't have been as easy. So I was definitely very blessed in the sense.
Well, that's good to know, and also quite heartening to know. But growing up, I mean, it takes a certain type of a character of a person to come and actually, you know, many people, guys and girls, are like, oh, bugger this, I'm going back to what's comfortable. I'm going back to mommy's cooking and things like that.
Exactly.
What, first of all, how were you brought up that you have this zest and this and this belief in yourself?
I think that it was my growing up that contributed. I was the only girl. I was surrounded by guys growing up. So I was always surrounded by very strong male figures that encouraged me to do whatever it is that I wanted to do. And they were, I always knew that I had protection around me. Yeah. Even though I grew up in Angola in a time when there was war, in a time where there was so much conflict, I always saw people around me fighting for what they believed in. Do you understand? And that kind of became engraved in me, knowing that no matter where I went, I knew that I could make it. I mean, because of the war in Angola, my dad flew me off to Portugal. So that is where I was doing my education.
Wow.
So already at a very young age, I was forced to leave my parents, go to a country where we spoke with the same language, but there was incredible racism.
Well, yeah, I was just going to get to that. I mean,
so I had to deal
that?
With that. I was the only black kid in school in a time where the kids were racist because they saw their parents being racist. Mm-hmm. So they were just doing what they felt was natural.
Well, it was like what growing up in apartheid.
Absolutely.
People just used words and
exactly,
said things because that's what they were
exactly.
told.
And in the beginning, I did feel I felt very overwhelmed, not having my parents there, not having somebody to go and cry to when I felt I was being bullied. But I learned very fast to just get over it.
Yeah, I suppose you develop a thick skin.
Exactly, you do. You develop a thick skin, and I think that is why I have such a big mouth, because from a very young age, I learned to defend myself, and I learned that you will only be bullied if you allowed yourself to be bullied. So once I found out that the minute that you answer back and that you show that you're not intimidated, the bullies actually become the cowards. And I'm like, okay, that has been taking me from childhood to my teens, that is what has been carrying me everywhere that I go. You can throw me anywhere.
Yeah.
And somehow, thank God, I'm just able to adapt.
Yeah.
And I always manage to find myself surrounded by the right people that will give me the right advice. And that is how I move forward.
Yeah. But, you know, touching on nobody really has spoken about the level of racism. I mean, we knew that it was happening in Portugal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, your parents sent you there. You were obviously put into a boarding school.
Yeah.
What was there also the level of racism that went up in terms of the teachers or your matrons?
Yes, because the teachers were just not used to having a black kid in school.
Wow.
And the thing is that the only reason that I was in a good school is because my dad worked in government. He had the means to send me outside. So it wasn't very common to see black kids having the same level of education as your middle class white kids, you know?
Yeah.
So the teachers, they did not know how to act. They also knew that as a black kid, they were used to treating black kids like, you know, the poor black kids, you know, how you feel sorry for them and so forth. Mm-hmm. So now how do we deal with this little girl? They did not, you know, we can't really be feeling sorry for her. She's dressing just like the other kids.
Yeah, she's a princess.
You know, she's a little princess, so. And somehow, I don't think if they realize it or not, they wanted me still to be in that mentality where I was supposed to be grateful, kind of. Do you understand?
Subordinate, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it goes back to that stigma of like, well, she's from Africa, you know, and the whole stigma of, well, Africa's just about starving children and flies
absolutely,
running around.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I'm like, listen, at the end of the day, I just want to come here and get my education. My dad knew more than 7 languages. He was very serious about all his children getting the right education. Mm-hmm. He believed that only with the right education were we going to be able to go back and change a country that at the time was going through so much turmoil.
Yeah.
So I took that with me. So whoever, even as a child, I felt was threatening me being able to make my dad proud, I would lash out because I'm like, hey, this is not about you, you know?
Yeah.
I've got a bigger thing to do. Even as a child, I had that sense of I have a certain responsibility.
Yeah.
And the problem is that then you go back to Angola, you have now a Portuguese accent, which is different from the Angolan accent.
Yeah.
So now your people are just like, oh, aren't you a coconut? Like, you can't win anywhere. I'm too black in Portugal. I'm too white in Angola. I'm like, what the? You know, it just becomes, oh, Lord. That is why I just learned to adapt wherever it is that I was. And I learned that home is literally where your heart is.
Yeah.
And I can make myself at home anywhere. I literally can, because I had to.
Yeah.
I had to from the age of 7, 8 years old. I had to learn how to do that and to fend for myself. And I didn't want to be that whiny kid, because I knew that my mom and dad already had too much to think about. So I learned how to solve my problems, bottle them up, do whatever I need to do just to keep on moving.
And to survive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And to survive. And that kind of contributed to the strong character that I have today.
You mentioned that, you know, home is where the heart is.
Yeah.
Did you come from a typical traditional home? I mean, your father, yes, he believes in education, but was he very strict?
He was incredibly strict. My dad was a commander of police in Angola.
Oh,
so he was he was one of the people that founded the police force in Angola. He was incredibly strict. I was lucky because I was the girl. I was the only girl. Mm. But I remember my brothers at the age of 14, they came home with a pierced ear. My dad threw them in jail and they only came out once the hole closed. So he was that kind of a father, like lead by example. It was that kind of a thing. He was extremely overprotective. Mm. And I remember having to go to school having guards with AK-47s. And that is how we were playing, having people with guns around us. Mm. And it was never normal. Kids knew that there was a sense of, I am not savior. Why is this person carrying this big gun? Even to class. I remember going to class, my grade 1 and grade 2, the guard would be outside of the door with a gun. And the kids didn't want to play with me because they knew, like, this kid, if we bully her.
You should have taken him to Portugal with you.
Exactly. I wish I could have taken him to Portugal. That was going to make my life easier. But he was... Okay, we grew up in a household where you have all meals at home. We grew up in a household. My stepbrothers had to call my mother mom because she's the one that brought him up.
Absolutely.
And it very good manners, everyone, being polite to everybody else. And he really wanted a traditional household because he knew that everything outside of that was anything but traditional.
Mm.
So he was trying to keep a sense of family because everyone was forever all over the place, wherever it is that he felt we would be protected.
Yeah.
So whenever we were all together, we still had to know that there was a head of the house that was in charge of everything and was there to keep us safe and make sure that things will still go according to plan, even though it seemed like it wasn't.
Yeah, but you see, that's beautiful, because I think where a lot of the family dynamics have disappeared and across cultures is that if you don't have that heart, first of all, the number one of knowing about who you are.
Exactly.
So that root, so whether it's Portuguese, whether it's Christian, whether it's South African, it's something that you can go back to.
Absolutely.
You know, nobody can take away your education or what you believe in your heart.
Yeah, that is
so true. You know, that's incredibly powerful, and I suppose it prepared you for the bullies in Portugal and the bullies in South Africa. And you became a model. I mean, we know where
those bullies were on another level.
You but know, before we go on, let's chat. We're ignoring our male counterpart here. How are you doing today, my darling?
I am perfect. Well, much better now that I'm with all these beautiful ladies.
You literally are surrounded by four women in the studio. It's fantastic. So tell us your journey. I mean, in the beginning of the show, I said that you and I go back a long way. And my first house that I ever bought was in the same complex where Michael stayed. And we're talking about maybe 15, 17 years
pretty
ago.
Pretty much, yes. Yeah, pretty much.
And
pretty much.
We used to both drive our little Tazzers. We used to wave each other, never ever spoke. And then later on in life, I was like, hey, I remember you. You're my neighbor. Because, I've been watching you. I'm like, I'm watching you too, you know.
So. I had a little crush, though. I just couldn't say it. This creepy little neighbor, you know. My journey, originally from Mozambique, at the age of one, the same sort of scenario with Weza, with the war turmoil in Mozambique.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up moving to Swaziland, so I pretty much grew up there till about, did my primary school there. Then in 1996, I came through to South Africa, did my high school here, mm-hmm. Parktown Boys. And that's pretty much when we sort of met.
Yeah.
Yes. And here I am.
And your main focus now is your music.
That's right, and production.
Music and production. Let's start with the music. I mean, where did that? Did you always have a love for it? Did you come from a family that played musical instruments? Where did the love actually come from? That passion.
Well, it was actually kind of a nice, how do I put it? A nice joint venture of everything. Mm. Musically, my family's quite big into it. My uncle was a jazz musician. My cousin was a producer. Mm. And always as a kid, what a lot of people don't know, while I lived in Swaziland, my mom used to travel. She was very young, so she had to sort of make means for me to actually like go to school. So I ended up being taken under the wing of our sports teacher, Mr. Platt, who I called Dad, who is actually a pastor.
Okay.
So... it was very sort of strict there, very, very sort of strict rules. He was a great man, he still is. And obviously on holiday, I'd either go to Mozambique on holiday mm-hmm. or Swaziland. But the Mozambique thing only a bit later, it wasn't stable. So like coming home and living with my cousins, they would always be in music, they were producing and et cetera. So
you always had that.
Always
and,
had
and
that
And
love.
In terms of the cultural exchange, because you're taken from Mozambique, which is right. predominantly Portuguese, and
that's
it's
right.
very, very different to what Swaziland is, where what languages did you speak? Was it Swati?
Siswati is
and English,
right?
Or
and
it just
English.
Siswati?
It is Siswati and English, mm-hmm. Obviously with Mozambique being Portuguese speaking.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how did you manage the transition when you had to go home? Although it was at a later stage, but there is that cultural difference when you do
slightly, but for some reason. I think I adapted well because just family statistics. I mean, from my mom's side, you know, we've got a black and white mixture, you know, and then from my dad's side, they Pakistani Saudi Arabian descent was mixed. So I pretty much have every sort of race in my family.
You got the best of all worlds.
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. So it was how would I put it? It was very mixed. I didn't really struggle that much. Mm-hmm. The good thing is that I'm very bilingual because of it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that I can be sort of put in any sort of situation. Mm.
And just adapt accordingly.
Okay, my Afrikaans is very crippled though. But
we'll forgive you, so is mine. But, don't worry about that.
But everything else is, pretty much all good.
And now the type of music, how would you classify your genre of music?
I'm a mainstream DJ, so I do sort of mainstream sounds from house to hip-hop, R&B. Mm-hmm. But my genuine love is probably jazz, bossa nova. Mm-hmm. I love our music, kizomba.
Sorry, what's bossa nova?
Bossa nova is basically your jazz, but a lot of Brazilian sort of traits.
Okay.
So it's slowed down. It's a very lively, very bubbly, very sensual version of jazz.
Yeah.
For those who don't know it, look it up. They've got beautiful music. Let me give you an example. Yeah. Sergio Mendes.
Okay. All right. Now here. Right. I see what
and Artur Verocai.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the foundation of bossa nova jazz.
Yeah. And then also kizomba. What is that?
Kizomba is, wow. Okay. Wesley's going to fight with me on this one. All right. No. Kizomba is actually the Angolan term. Basically, we have our music where we sort of dance together. It's almost like jazzing and lambada sort of style. Mm-hmm. Very sensual. Well, there's very different variations. Now, in Mozambique, we call it passada. Mm-hmm. And in Angola, they call it kizomba. Well,
okay.
I think Angola and Cabo Verde, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's our sort of music with our dialect, and from Cabo Verde they use more Creole, which is basically the native language with mm-hmm. French, mm-hmm. and in Angola it's mainly Portuguese with a couple of dialects thrown in it, mm-hmm. and in Mozambique we've got our own sort of in Portuguese, but then we have our variations which move into Marabenta and basically a lot of Shangaan and Tsonga influence.
Oh wow,
that. Yeah,
that's quite exciting. Well, we're going to play a kizomba mix which I found, which you actually mixed yourself.
Right.
So just so our listeners can get a taste and a feel of the presence that we have in the room today.
Ladies and gentlemen, a brief announcement. DJ Voodoo has arrived and is in the building.
You remember me, don't you?
What we're gonna do now is go back.
Achas que ele tem dinheiro, né? Por porque já não me queres mais.
iStore employs real people who love Apple products and sell Apple products, like the Apple iPhone 6 and the Apple iPhone 6 Plus. So if you're looking to upgrade and going somewhere that doesn't specialize in Apple seems silly, it's because it is. Especially since you can take out or upgrade any contract on any network at iStore, even if you took it out somewhere else. iStore, why would you go anywhere else? Visit myistore.co.za for more info. T's and C's apply.
Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to the show. The time is 28 minutes past 3. My name is Rosie Mutena, aka the Afro-Yiddish Princess. And today we're looking at Portuguese-speaking Africa. Yo, you need to go to my Instagram page. I just loaded up some dance moves. Kazomba. So tell me, were you, I mean, the way the two of you, like when you heard the different song, and I want to talk about the different artists that were featured in that mix, which was mixed by DJ Voodoo, by the way. But were you brought up in a home where you were taught the different dance moves?
Absolutely. I mean, by the time you can walk, you know how to dance kizomba.
You're supposed to.
You know, you have to know how to dance kizomba. I think that when every time I came back from Portugal for the holidays in Angola, my way to prove that I was still Angolan was by me dancing kizomba. Like, okay, she's still one of ours. Okay,
I love that.
So it really, and it looks very sensual, especially from, I know that every time there were Angolan parties and we would dance kizomba, because to the naked eye, it will look like you're reggae grinding. Like DJ Voodoo and I were doing the PG version. It's more sensual, but we fall in love with the music so much. Mm. And there is a history between every song. There is a connection there where two total strangers can dance exactly the same way we were dancing. Mm. And then it literally is just about the movement.
Yeah, yeah. It is. It is a lot about Kizomba is that we have this scenario where in the club, you get a few jealous boyfriends now and then, but you could actually just walk up to a girl, ask to dance, and then you dance.
Yeah.
And it is purely just a song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, our way of life, we're very driven by music and food, and dance is very, very big for
us. Part of the culture. Yeah.
It's definitely part of the culture.
Yeah. And the choice of artists that you used in this mix, let's talk about that.
Basically, most of them are from Angola, Viva Weza.
Yeah.
So we've got, there was quite a few guys from like Galo Pascual, Tropical Band, and a couple other, Cabo Verde guys, and Paulo Floge, which is probably your biggest artist within our sort of music. And the tracks that you're listening to were more your classics.
Right.
Yeah.
Basically, I think everyone has memories from, I mean, those tracks date down to at least 10 years, some of them.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah. And the radio situation in Mozambique, is it like South Africa where it's actually South Africa, we don't play enough of our local content. What is, if you were go to Mozambique, is it predominantly Western or predominantly Portuguese Mozambique?
I think, from Mozambique side, we're very balanced. We do have a lot of our own music, which we play as well. But South Africa's Mozambique loves South African music. I think with our borders sort of in close proximity, they love house, they love kwaito, which is very surprising.
Oh, wow.
You know? Yeah, like, no, but we're talking the older stuff, you know.
No, but they're too kwaito.
Like, they like when your, they knew
like
all
your
the kwaito.
Like your authors, etc., your mdus, etc.
The dons are kwaito,
So I think of music is very balanced, but we do have a good a balance between local, international, and West African music is also very big now. And
West African music's really, it's taking over everywhere.
If I may add, we also have, there's another genre to it which the French and Congolese call Zouk, which basically stems pretty much the whole of West Africa.
Yeah.
And that also gets played a lot into it. Might to someone who doesn't understand Portuguese, it all sounds like one.
Yeah.
But it is pretty much a variation of languages and traditions and customs put into that mix.
Yeah. And the school setups are the Mozambique or Angola from an early age. What's the word I'm looking for? Like cultural integration do they have at school at an early age?
During my time, there was basically very little culture integration.
Okay.
Because I remember, I kept on thinking, we have so many influences in Angola. The Portuguese that colonized us, the Brazilians that we grew up watching. And for a very long time, I used to criticize Angola a lot because I felt that there was a lack of cultural influence in Angola. Because if you go to Angola today, most of the people from my generation can only speak Portuguese. Wow. You can count. It's a jewel when you find a young girl or a young man that can speak a traditional language in Angola. And when I say Angola, I'm saying mainly the capital, which is Luanda, exactly, which are the people that I'm mainly exposed to. But then I started going back to the time and realizing that we had war first during the colonization and then our civil war between 1975 and 2002. So all our figures that were there to give us that cultural backbone, they were out there fighting in the war. We lost our mothers, our dads, our grandfathers, our brothers. We lost the people that were supposed to force that cultural influence in the school.
And to schools, be that pillar.
Exactly. So that even if the school system didn't have at home, you would have something like that. And in the school system, they literally were just focusing on trying to have people that knew how to read and write.
Yeah.
If you knew how to read and write, that was already a good enough thing. Mm. We have no more, we didn't have enough teachers, and most of the teachers were always on strike. The ones that we had were not that educated. That's why you will find them Angolans that had lived outside of Angola for such a long time, because our parents knew that if we stayed in Angola, it wasn't going to go anywhere. We were not going to be having the education to come back and try to build that country from the ground up. So very little cultural influence. And I remember that if not for hearing my mom sometimes speaking traditional languages, I wouldn't pick up a thing or two, but I cannot up to today speak a traditional language. And I'll become so surprised when I would see a young kid speaking Zulu, Sotho, and whatever. I'm like, oh my word, like I wish that was part of my bringing up. I wish I had that.
Yeah.
And going back to Angola, my cousins that lived in the provinces, the ones that could speak, I would be so jealous of that. So jealous of the fact that they had something other than Portuguese.
Yeah. Well,
but like,
it's also, it's,
yeah, exactly, it's also something, something that's so traditionally it, and culturally.
It takes you back to who you are. Takes you back to who you are. And I know that when we were colonized, obviously the Portuguese wanted everybody just to be speaking Portuguese so that people were not getting together and having little meetings and trying to overthrow them or something like that. Understandable.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that I think was that did last, which was, I think, a positive thing, was actually religion. Christianity, to be more specific, I'd say Roman Catholic was integrated from then, and it's the only thing that sort of till today still runs, and it is very, very big. Slightly different to Mozambique, and Mozambique being on that coast of the east coast of Africa has a lot of Islamic influence.
Right.
So obviously, and I know there's not a lot of Indians in Angola, but when I say Indians, let me refer to the whole continent. Pakistan, now in Mozambique, so Islamic and Christianity is very big.
But
and
in terms of the Mozambique, religion, hey, sorry. I
mean, there hasn't been any, there hasn't been any conflict in terms of the two religions from that. That's the one country that you don't hear of any conflict resolutions coming up, or am I wrong?
Not really. I don't know. There's nothing, anything severe, mass murders, bombings, etc., etc. Yeah. I think we're a very peaceful, loving nation, right? Every nation has its stress. At the current moment, what's very big, and it's something that's been adopted from Pakistan and India, is the kidnappings. That's very big in Mozambique now. They're targeting, at first it was just mainly... And I put it in brackets, Indian sort of base between rich business people kidnapping each other. Now it's actually moved on to anybody who has money.
Okay. You know, well, that's a problem across Africa.
It's becoming very big.
For many, many years, it was a big problem in Nigeria.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, if you're a person going to Nigeria and you don't have the protocol collect, you can disappear into the Niger Delta.
Very quickly.
But you know what I love about I mean, I've never been to Angola and I still need to get there. I loved about all my trips to Mozambique is that, as you said, that joy for life.
Yeah.
It's that for the first time I went to a club and like 9 o'clock in the morning, you saw the old bully still dancing on the dance floor, dancing, carrying on. And where does that, I mean, where does that idea and that philosophy come from?
Oh, well, we like I say, eating music is very, very big for us.
Yeah.
Like every nation can brag about their music, but we do it like till the wee hours of the morning. I think Mozambique is that probably, and Angola, and or should I say countries colonized by Portugal, which we refer to as Balop countries.
Mm.
We have, we don't really have sort of time frames as to when venues must close, etc. So we do it till the wee hours of the morning, 9, 10, 11.
Until your legs can't.
No, very tropical, relaxed atmosphere.
I remember coming here and... We are so used to going partying in Angola like at midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and then leaving at 9, 8, 9.
Yeah.
I would get to a club here at like 2 o'clock and people are ready to go. I'm like, what's going on? I'd be so confused when I would see 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock kind of let's meet. I'm like, who goes out at that time? That's the time we're having dinner. And then we're having dinner at 10, 11, then getting ready. Then we still sleep, wake up at around midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, get dressed, all freshen up, and then go to the club so that you last until 8, 9.
Yeah.
So
that's now I get it. Why you last so long?
Yeah.
We the South Africans later.
Early bird.
7 o'clock, and it's like, let's drink our caparitas, let's eat our pork. And then 3 o'clock, we're like, what the hell? Are these people still going?
You guys are finished at that time. Yeah.
But I also understand that music was our way of dealing with pain.
Mm.
I know that in my home, we had a whole lot of politicians that were very unhappy with the state of the country going up, and my dad would be on the piano, somebody would be on the trumpet, and they would sing.
Wow.
They would sing their sorrows away. They would sing about things that they're not allowed to talk about politically, and the songs had a beat. The songs had some kind of hope in it. As kids, we were taught songs of, and gosh, when I go back to those books, as kids, we were taught that we would fight and die for a country, and we would chant those things without even understanding what it is. So I am so and so. If a commander stops me, I will never reveal so and so. We are being taught these songs growing up, and we are being taught these songs in school. So music was more than just music to us. It was a way of communicating, of expressing. Dancing is what we did when things were really bad, so that we could laugh about our problems. So we literally danced our problems away all of the dance moves, you will see dance moves where they're imitating like a disabled person or something like that. And for the naked eye, you can laugh about it, but everything it had a history. We had so many amputees that were coming back from the war and so forth. So we took that pain and we turned it into music and into dance, and we tried to make something light out of it. Otherwise, we were going to be a very sad, angry, frustrated kind of population, nation.
And it's also, excuse my language, but it's also putting the middle finger up to the colonizers.
Absolutely.
Saying, well, you could do, you've done what you've done, but we're still going to rise.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. It's
incredibly powerful.
We had a, we still do. Like I was referring, I mentioned him in the mix. His name is Paulo Flores.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's probably your biggest, fighter musically.
Yeah.
He's got into a lot of trouble for his music, but he makes beautiful music, and it's all about the struggle. He'd make a song about water, food, and anything that was struggle based but beautiful music till today.
Yeah.
Some people got killed because of their music.
Well, that was going to be my next point, because I mean, in South Africa, we had our protest theatre and so forth, but then it got to a point where some of our actors and thespians had to leave the country.
Yeah,
you
because
know, I mean, my Miriam was phenomenal in what she the message she put across.
Right. She had to flee.
Yeah,
yeah. In Angola, you didn't have time to flee. There was literally, we all knew the story of artists or singers that would sing and people would put their songs on radio, and it was, they were complaining about the government system and how things were going, but in a comedy kind of form. And I feel like in here, through comedy, you get away with a lot of things. In there, they are watching you, like you're not going to get away with it.
Yeah.
And it's no jokes. People, the next day, whole families would disappear. Not just the artist, the mother, the dad, the brothers. And
take the cat too.
Exactly. Take the dog, the cat, and the neighbors would not know anything about it because
they were too scared.
Exactly, they were too scared to say anything. So for a very long time, just for you to have songs and songs that you can dance to about what was going on, songs laughing about the suffering and the fact that we have no water, no electricity, no food, no whatever, that was taken as a direct threat to the president or to whatever else. So Paulo Flores and a lot of those artists, they were putting their lives at risk when they were singing about that.
Wow.
And many times it was just melancholic. They weren't trying to stir up something. They were just
using their right to speak, their voice.
Exactly.
That's it.
People were opening their eyes to the fact that, you know what, even though we are laughing, actually it is not funny. Things are not really good in here. And Paulo can take you there. Yeah. Paulo Flores is one of the judges for the Voice Angola, and I am obsessed with this man because he managed through music just to teach so much, and he took us back to our culture. He would purposely sing in our traditional languages, forcing us to go back and try to understand what he was saying, because his voice is so beautiful, you want to understand every single word.
He's your Frank Sinatra.
I was just gonna say, who would you describe him?
Frank Sinatra, but let's say mix him with Oliver Mtukudzi.
Oh wow.
That sort of feel.
Yeah.
Beautiful music but has substance.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of music nowadays, just even the stuff that he releases now,
it still has
a lot of substance.
Well, he comes from the old school.
Yeah.
Yes, he is very old school. Yeah. He's still got
I want to talk about the voice, but before we get there, let's talk about the music production side. I mean, compared to the work that you do here and the music production that you do in Mozambique.
I've become involved in a little project called, well, a band to put it. It's called Prom Nights.
Mm-hmm.
We into music production. Our sound, fair enough, is not of South African. It's not a South African sort of base. Mm. It's very sort of UK house.
Okay.
That's the sort of feel that we're doing it with, electronic, you know, think Gorgon City, think... Disclosure. That is sort of our sound. Okay. A very beautiful sort of sound. And that's pretty much what I'm busy working in at the moment.
And I got one of your mixes, and it's called the Carnival Latin. What? Let's talk about that before we play.
Oh, that is quite a beautiful mix, just to show how integrated we are, yet we don't know it.
Yeah.
For instance, the Carnival Latin mix, basically, it's your Carnival House classics, which were very big in South Africa.
Mm.
Your house remixes of Cesare Evora, Sang de Verona.
Well, it just showed my age, because when I was doing the research, I was like, oh my God, yes, I remember.
You remember those songs?
Yes. One,
Like Nichinha, Musica Feliz. There were, I'd say, probably bigger here, because of the remixes and the affiliations that the producers had with South Africa.
Yeah.
But when I do mixes, I sort of like to take you through a journey.
Mm.
And I think that mix was of a specific period in SA, let's say early 2000s, mm-hmm. which is like your explosions, all those electric circus, those parties downtown. That was that sort of era.
Yeah, the Carfax, all of that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Not Carfax, electric workshop. Electric workshop.
Sorry, yeah.
The first Fresh House flavors, yeah. etc. That was the sound end. And then I actually ended it off with a samba track and then a remix of 340's More Midnight just to sort of soothe it out.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a listen to that. It's the DJ Voodoo Carnival Latin House Mix.
Ladies and gentlemen, a brief announcement. DJ Voodoo has arrived and is in the building.
You remember me, don't you?
What we gonna do right here is go back. Way back. Back into time.
The show, it is 15:47, and in studio we have the gorgeous Wizza Solange and we have DJ Voodoo. We've been talking about Portuguese speaking Africa, and something very exciting that's been happening for the last 5 to 10 years. People have been trying to connect with Angolan television, finding out what can be done. But one of the, I think, the biggest barriers that have happened is the language barrier.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I know MultiChoice has had difficulties getting there, all sorts of other areas. But with the diaspora and with people moving around the continent, there's more of a scope for people within South Africa wanting to watch Portuguese channel.
Yeah.
And now The Voice, the international brand, I think let's touch on that for a bit.
Yeah, let's start with that. I was so excited when they decided to take The Voice to Angola. And I mean, usually shows like that, we don't even, it never gets to Angola.
Yeah.
We've never been a part of such productions, predominantly because of the language and because countries found it so hard to just get into the minds of people and understand what's going on. And I'm so happy that the business sense of MultiChoice is coming and they realize that Angola is a huge market, Angola and Mozambique. Everything that they do for Angola, they do equally the same for Mozambique as well.
But also what people don't realize is it's a lucrative market.
Absolutely.
Angola is not cheap.
Yeah.
Angola. Yeah. If you're going to make money in Angola, it's some serious dollars.
Listen, Luanda, which is the capital of Angola, is still the most expensive city in the world. Do you understand? And that is not something to brag about because it's still Africa and there is still a lot of poverty. But just for you to have an idea of you spend a lot of money, but there is an incredible amount of money to be made there. And I think that MultiChoice has tapped into that, and they are going crazy with the amount of shows that they are doing for Angola. They started with Big Brother Angola. We've always had Big Brother Africa, but it got lost in translation again because of the language.
Yeah.
They brought Big Brother Angola, did the whole production here in South Africa, meaning they flew everybody in from people from production because everybody needs to speak Portuguese and so forth. And now they did the same with The Voice Angola. The Voice Angola is huge because it's the first time The Voice is coming to Africa, obviously, and they decided to start with Angola, then go to South Africa and so forth. But logistically, it is the kind of production that requires millions and millions just to put together, because you start with a pre-selected audition in Angola of over 100 people. Over these 100 people, they come here to South Africa with family members, 2 to 3 family members each.
Wow.
Now, because they wanted to make it authentic, The Voice Angola, they didn't just stick to the capital, which is what they usually do. They went to those remote provinces to find that raw talent. And these are people that had no IDs, no passports. These are people that were living in the rural area.
That is powerful. I've actually got goosebumps. You know? That is powerful.
And those are the most amazing voices. They've never had any training, but you have people singing opera, and we are just being blown away by how much talent we have in that country. So you had to take these people, put their papers right, and then bring them all here to SA. And some of them, it was the first time that they had been on a plane, much less on a television show.
But never alone. I mean, if they went into the rural areas, maybe it's the first time they've even been to a city.
To a city, exactly.
That
let's
is
start.
Powerful. Yeah, love it.
So it was. But for me, what made so many of us cry so many times was that, oh my word, there is so much hidden talent. You know, musically, we've always had your Paulo Flores and your Yola Semedo, but we never thought that we had the kind of musicians that you would equal to your Mariah Careys and your Beyoncé's and your so forth, people that could reach that kind of tune, because our songs have never been about belching and or who can sing the loudest and so forth, but we have that talent. We have people that do not speak a word in English singing perfectly English songs.
Wow.
These are people that do not even know how to read and write, some of them, but that is what globalization is doing, to the point where people, thanks to TV and the internet, are exposed to what's going on around the world. And the voice itself, but in Angola, is proof that language really is not a barrier when it comes to music.
In fact, especially when it comes to music.
Especially
and
when
the fact that the
music.
Rest of Africa is actually understanding that we shouldn't be fearing the Portuguese speaking, is that
the
you can
country,
actually learn a lot.
Exactly, exactly. Know? So The Voice Angola has been a huge success. Angola itself is realizing that we have so much potential. We have to invest more on these people. There is not a lot of investment when it comes to music schools. We do not have a lot of those. That is still an area that is very much open. So you will not find it. Like, I think that even here in SA, sometimes it's easier because now you have more music schools. You can put a kid in a music school from the age of 9 or 10. In Angola, you hardly see that. So the select few that do have that privilege, they are like amongst the top. And I think that shows like The Voice Angola, not only do they promote that kind of talent, but they promote other business revenues, because now people are going like, wait a second, we can start investing in this and on that. We have enough of a crowd, enough of a public to start investing into their culture. A lot of the kids had to run away from home to come to The Voice Angola because parents do not believe in music as a way of making a living.
Well, I was just going to say, because it's going back to the old tradition, and that's not just Angola, it's across Africa.
Exactly.
It's like, no, if you're not a teacher, if you're not a doctor, a lawyer,
exactly. It is a hobby. That is not, I mean, my own family until 2 years ago was still telling me for me to send my CV so that they could get me a proper job, a respectable job in Angola. Seriously, that is what they did. So those kids, some of them had to beg their family members to come and support them, because it is still a TV production. And for you to see like a 70-year-old man that has not been exposed to this, seeing the kid on stage, crying either because they got accepted or rejected. And you can see it in the eyes that it's the first time that they're linking up and realizing just how important it is. And you don't see that kind of emotion from Angolans. We are used to seeing our parents not cry, not show emotion. That is not like, we are very physical in as a young people, but there is still a certain level of respect between the elders where we're not like buddies. We don't cry about stuff. So it is bringing a new side of emotion, which is absolutely beautiful, and it's bringing up a lot of old wounds. Music always does that. It always goes back to, why did you not believe in me? Why did you not think it was possible? So the Voice Angola, it's contributing in ways that people cannot even imagine.
I don't even think Gemma's Choice realized
they did
exactly
not realize what they had in their hands until it started literally developing before their very eyes, and just everybody realized unfolding, oh my word, this is gold. You could
and
see
when's the first TX?
Okay, so the first TX for the live shows is going to be now in January. Right now we are running the pre-recorded section, which is the blinds and then the battles. So from the 2nd of January it goes live, people can start voting, and it's going to be amazing.
Beautiful. We're going to support that definitely.
And in fact, oh, by the way, I'm the V reporter for the Voice Angola.
When it airs, TX's first show, we'll bring you back into studio.
Most
and discuss
definitely.
It. And for you, my DJ Voodoo, where can we catch you? Lopulance in Sandton?
Yeah, I host the Opulent Thursdays at Lopulance, which is a new lounge in the Legacy Corner, Sandton City.
Beautiful, sophisticating adult dining. I recommend it to anybody if you're in Johannesburg.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. It is definitely very much more mature vibe. It's an early evening thing. It's not a nightclub. I'll always tell people that. It's more restaurant based, firstly, because we have amazing food, and obviously then there's a music element into it. So it's basically restaurant come lounge, and we do have the facilities should it escalate into something.
And
I think it's great because it's in Sandton City, it's central, there's great parking, the security is great.
And it's safe, that's the main thing, it's safe. And your Uber can drop you right outside. Drink and drive.
Drop you the Da Vinci, press 3 in the elevator. That's it.
I love it.
It's quite simple.
And for fans, what is your Twitter handle?
Oh, for fans, Weza, Weza _ Solange, Solange. That is for Twitter. That is for Instagram. On Facebook, you can find me on Weza Solange as well. Email WezaBookings@gmail.com. And yep.
Fantastic. And you?
And me, it's ironically, I'm from Mozambique, but my handle is @DJVoodooSA. That's VOODOOSA. So I live here. This is where I ply my trade, and I've pretty much been here most of my life. And that's for all mediums.
Yeah.
Easy. So Twitter, Facebook.
Otherwise, just follow. So. It's all on my different pages, and you can see their beautiful pictures. And I've also posted that fantastic little dance that they did for us in studio. Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. Really, and thank you for allowing us to show another aspect of it. Of Mozambique.
Beautiful.
And
I mean, Africa is just like it's exploding.
It is.
And
it
we're
is.
At the forefront of just pushing it forward and believing it. So.
And I'm so happy that we're all happy to be Africans. It is a great time to be
finally.
African. Finally. It is a great
what
time.
What a time we to are be in, alive.
We're embracing each other. It's beautiful. It really is.
Absolutely. That's it for me. If you'd like to get a hold of me, my Twitter handle is PrincessRTM. Otherwise, we will see you next week, same time, same place. Bye.
Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.